All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Friday, December 2nd. I am Doug Norrie, that is...
James.
Davis, and we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, or DFSR.com, if you like typing in less letters into your web browser, and we're here to help you continue winning or get started on FanDuel or DraftKings, and you can go over to our site right now and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system, which is going to inform most of what we talk about here on the podcast. That's free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that, and you're all set. That includes NBA projections for FanDuel and DraftKings, and NFL projections as well, optimal lineups for both. So really all you need to get started and get going with NBA DFS. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised for that, for those free 3 days, and we think you will stick around. All right, dude, before we get into today, well, actually, I guess it has to do with today, because last night, the Rockets and Warriors played a game that... Basically, that's what you want to see every single time you tune in to the NBA, is a game like happened last night. It was up and down the court. It was basically just what you would expect, double overtime game. How do you think it's something like that, you know, the Rockets play today, how do you think a double overtime game for Harden and company affects minutes today when they play Denver?
Well, I'll start by saying that I don't think it affects things as much as some people. Like, as a general rule, I tend to worry less about back-to-backs than almost everyone, I would say. Yeah. But double overtime really is something special. Although, if you look at the actual minutes these guys wind up playing, so Harden played 46 minutes. That's a lot of minutes, but spread out over an extended time period, like a double overtime game, it's really not much more than he'll play in just an average kind of close game in a lot of ways. He'll play 41 minutes in a regular game, or 39 or 40 minutes. So I don't think it affects Harden all too much. And then you have guys like, you know, Patrick Beverley played just 29 minutes. Clint Capella played 25 minutes, which was kind of interesting since we talked about yesterday how he would potentially be susceptible to getting his minutes cut in this matchup. But I think it's worth considering. There's no question about that. And it will be the type of thing where the Rockets will find more reasons to get guys rest tonight as opposed to less. But overall, I'm not going to tear my hair out about it.
Yeah, that's the, you know, I had looked before while writing the picks last night before the game went to double overtime, just to sort of check on what the Rockets had done in back-to-back so far this season. And this is before, this is not even in anticipation of the double overtime, but just wondering sort of on Harden in general. And unfortunately, both times in their back-to-backs, the second game of the back-to-back was a blowout. So it was like hard to know exactly like what their management process was going to be with minutes on these guys, because the two games just naturally had the minutes buzzed off for the starters because the game was out of reach. So I think what happens is this Friday isn't as huge of a slate as normal, and Harden is just clearly the best player on the slate. And so, I mean, I guess Davis plays as well, but I think that's going to be the biggest question people have going into tonight, is just what, like, how to evaluate, quote, tired legs. I'm using that because I think that's how people are going to view a guy like Harden tonight. And so it'll be interesting. I'm not totally positive. I'm kind of with you in that I kind of just want to take things for what they're worth for the most part and say a guy's going to play, and that's just kind of going to be it, because there's only so many NBA games in a season, and especially for the Rockets, they kind of need to win them as many as possible. So
yeah, I mean, the Rockets are 12-7 right now. They're right. I think, exceeding a lot of people's expectations. Worth noting, you know, the Rockets, I don't think they've played a back-to-back all season yet somehow, which is pretty amazing. Or actually, I guess they played one, and they blew Portland out.
Well, so that was it. Yeah. His minutes, but, right. That was it. So it was just like hard to know exactly what their plan was. So yeah, I don't know. We'll get into some positions, and we'll eventually get to Harden, I guess. Well, I don't know, sure, we need to revisit them totally. But at point guard, what are you seeing here for point guard tonight? And there's a couple of higher price guys. I'm not sure we want to go in that direction. Give me some thoughts on point guard.
Yeah, I do think your intuition is spot on that going a little cheaper at point guard probably makes sense tonight. So the guy that we have listed first is Rajon Rondo. And, you know, it's not a great matchup at all against Cleveland, just because Cleveland tends to play a little bit slow. But obviously, if you're going up against Kyrie, you're going up against the weakest defender in the starting five. Well, Kevin Love, I guess, is cut to Kevin Love being like, hey, man, come on, you know, what about me? But Cleveland does defend the interior better than they do the point guard position. And you know, Rondo's just been good. You know, he's been paying this price pretty routinely. he obviously is the primary ball handler there instead of Jimmy Butler being there, and he's finding guys on the perimeter, giving them open looks, keeping his plus-plus-plus rebounding for the position going. So he just looks solid to me.
Yeah, that's where his floor really is raised, is that he just will do little bits of everything considering his price. And so that's really always kind of been his story, is that he just finds his way around the court enough to make up for the fact that he really can't shoot. So, you know, it's funny too, because the game tonight, I'm interested to see. Cleveland's on the back-to-back, but they got blown out again last night. And this is two in a row. Like, they got blown out by Milwaukee, and now they just got blown out by the Clippers last night at home. So I'm not too worried. I think the game stays close, but Rondo's price is just probably too good to pass up. What about a guy like Wall against the Spurs? He's playing huge minutes, but it's the Spurs, and they're just underdogs. And I get worried because the Spurs are just a good team.
Yeah, I don't think I can see any reason to necessarily trot Wall out there against the Spurs. We actually have a pretty recent game where they played against each other, and Wall was pretty bad. I mean, interesting in that game was how the Spurs were able to cut off his assists, and I think their excellent rotation defense, their ability to fly around in the perimeter in particular, really hurts the less experienced guys like Otto Porter and Bradley Beal, and that hurts Wall by proxy. So, you saw him getting pretty frustrated in that game, and just didn't go very well. So not that you can take a one-game sample size to mean too much, but it was basically his worst fantasy performance of the season. And for a guy whose price is, you know, hovering around about as high as it gets, taking him against a team that he had his worst game against, it just seems like you can probably do better.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think he's a candidate for huge minutes if for some reason the Wizards can keep the game close, but it's keeping the game close that is ultimately the worry on him. A couple other guys, like I think Dennis Schrader's really interesting. If Millsap sits tonight, his usage went way up last game. I guess the matchup was a little better than it was because of against the Suns. This is against Detroit tonight, but I could see him being interesting. I'm more inclined to do it if Millsap is out, because they just lose not a outstanding amount of shots, but it's enough shots that seem to get passed to a ball first guy like Schrader. So that's kind of, I'm going to hope that we have information on Millsap prior to the game. I know he was like sort of questionable leading into the last one, but some of these other guys, like a guy like Lowry against the Lakers, you know, the Lakers seem like a good matchup. Our system, Lowry, we have him at like 37 minutes, but it just really doesn't love him. Do you think it's like a price thing on him at this point? He's getting pretty expensive.
Yeah, I think it is seeing that. And I think it's also seeing, you know, some residual effects from DeMar DeRozan kind of taking over most of the offensive load. So, you know, you look at a guy like Lowry at 8,700, and in that price range, if you're not the primary shooter on your team, it's really hard to pay value consistently. So for him, we see in the last three games, 13, 9, and 13 shots from the field. That's really low. And, you know, he happens to have made a lot of those shots. But like if you tell me you're going to get a guy in a good matchup with Philly, who's going to shoot 78% from the field and just not even hit 5X on his price, it's like, that's a red flag to me.
Right.
He's a decent assist guy, but he's actually lower than some of the other elite guys at the position just because DeRozan creates so many shots for himself. So I think the combination of that, the fact that he has never blocked anyone before, the fact that he's doesn't rebound the position terribly, but not exceptionally well. Like, it's just not totally a $9,000 package in a lot of ways, and it can be right in the right matchup and in the perfect spot, but the Lakers are not as soft a matchup as they have been historically, and I think it's just the way it all kind of comes together is that he's on the outside looking in.
Yeah, and I think the other factor that's going to go into the tonight just in general is what the Clippers do on the back-to-back, like what you see out of Chris Paul or Blake. They sat Blake the other day. They didn't have to go crazy last night because they won in a blowout, but there's a lot of sort of early on right now. It's 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. There's just a lot of things that I think we don't know yet about how some of these teams are going to handle these back-to-backs. So just some things to keep in mind. On shooting guard, you know, we mentioned Harden. Harden, to me, I mean, of the high price guys, so the most expensive guys tonight are Harden at 11.5. I'm talking about FanDuel, 11.5. Then you have Cousins at 10.9. Then you have Davis against the Clippers. At some point, you know, you can middle out a lot of these lineups, but at some point, usually, you're going to end up playing one of these expensive guys. Even on the back-to-back, is Harden the easiest? Like, is he just like the clear cash gameplay?
I don't know if he's clear. You know, I guess I'm going to have to think a little bit more on the risks surrounding playing him on after a 46-minute night, but he's still solid. I mean, the Nuggets are a fantastic matchup. They just don't have a defender in the backcourt that can cover Harden. So it's definitely one of those nights where he could just simply eviscerate the Nuggets. But I just wish we had a little bit more of a sample size for this season, because, of course, we can go back to last season and look. But with a different coach, you know, there's going to be a different philosophy, like in terms of how many minutes players play on a back-to-back. That's probably the thing coaches differ the most on, I would say, because, right. You know, we see guys like Thibodeau, who just don't care at all. Like, you second half of the back-to-back, no problem. Get in there, buddy. Right. you're playing 45 minutes once again. And we know, like, on an organizational level, the Rockets are obviously okay with Harden playing tons of minutes. I did find a couple games last season where, you know, second half of the back-to-back, where Harden played 40 minutes in back-to-back nights. Several of those, like five or six. So I would say, or on an organizational level, like, you know, D'Antoni's not getting notes saying, hey, don't play this guy right. a bunch of minutes tonight. So I think you can trust it.
Yeah, and the other issue with Harden, well, it's not even an issue with Harden, it's more just about the position as a whole. Shooting guard is just a very, very thin position in general tonight. And so that's going to be the other piece that probably makes him jump to the top, is that after him, I mean, at least on FanDuel, so you have the aforementioned Tibbs, who you have Zach LaVine, who played an insane amount of minutes the other night against the Knicks, and they're actually going to go back. They're like on that back, whatever that's called, home and home or whatever it's called. So the Minnesota does play the Knicks again tonight. He played like some like over 40 minutes again.
42 minutes,
yeah. Right? Exactly, and he was bad. So and the problem with LaVine is if he doesn't score, you're dead. Right on him, at least like in the way that they're the current situation with the Wolves.
Yeah,
is.
Sometimes he can run the second unit, you know, and get some assists. But yeah, by and large, I'd say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, and figuring they're bringing in like Dunn off the bench to run the point guard too. Like, he's just not the guy he was last year when Rubio was out. He's just more of just a traditional shooting guard. So, but that being said, are the minutes safe enough that you can just even at 6,000 on FanDuel go back to him here?
I don't know that you're excited about it necessarily, but. There is upside there. I mean, he's definitely topped 5X, 6X on this price before, and that's a lot. I mean, against Utah, he played 44 minutes and put up 48 fantasy points. That's, you know, a GPP winning level kind of performance there. So, you know, taken as a whole, if you kind of average everything out, LaVine has been fairly solid on this price in this role, and that might just be good enough on a night where the position is very shallow.
Yeah, and then there's some other guys. Like, you have J.J. Redick coming pretty cheap. I had to preface I did write him up last night, and I needed to say, like, the system didn't care that he was just shot the lights out against the Cavs last night. So, like, we don't really factor in recent performance, good or bad. You know, sometimes that's frustrating for people that, for users of ours that are going to say, oh, he's been so bad lately from the field.
Right, and, super recent performance.
Right, and it's just not going to factor that in, and you really can't. And if you're factoring in recent game logs, this goes back to the old baseball thing, then you're just not evaluating statistics properly, right?
Yeah, so, I think we can give a little window into the process there, because some people may be confused. So, like, every game certainly matters within the system, but no individual game, well, and there's different factors that we'll take into account, right? So an individual game for your shooting percentage, say, will make no difference unless there's some contextual issue going on, like when Gordon Hayward hurt his finger earlier this season.
Right.
But, you know, an individual game where, you know, one guy was missing and you shoot 24 shots in that guy's absence, like picture when we were on Harrison Barnes a little bit earlier than most people this season when Dirk and Williams would go out. So that does matter a little bit more, right? But if the guy's fundamental opportunity, if his fundamental role on the team hasn't changed, then one night either way, a great night or a terrible night, won't sway us. And I think that's exactly, you know, why we might wind up having Redick on some of his bigger nights after, like, you know, against Indiana, he had 6 fantasy points, right? So this is not a guy who's super, super safe, but yeah, he'll go off from time to time.
Yeah, and the matchup's great. New Orleans still is not a very good defensive team. They've improved, mostly getting Holiday back because they can just it's easier for them to score now, especially with their second unit. But their defense hasn't really dramatically improved by any means. So Clippers still in a good spot. But actually, the good news for the Clippers and Pelicans is that getting Holiday back for the Pelicans means that they can stay in games, right?
I knew you were going to say that, buddy.
You did? Okay. Oh, yeah. It means they can stay in games. The blowout factor is lessened because they're just an improved team on offense. So without getting necessarily worse on defense, it was going to be hard for them to get a lot worse on defense, no matter who they kind of brought in.
Amen.
But so anyway, Redick's another guy. Avery Bradley's another guy I think we can maybe consider. The minutes are still there for him. So and you just need to kind of catch him on the right shooting night. But okay, let's head over to small forward. Jay Crowder had his minutes cap lifted last game. You know, he had been battling some injuries early in the season, and then just they had been, you know, playing pretty conservative with his minutes. But there was a note before the game last game that it was going to happen, and then it followed suit, where he played 35 minutes. Is he just like a total lock for cash games on FanDuel? 5,300, I'm not sure the price has come up to sort of reflect that he's just going to be on the court more now.
Yeah, I think that's a fine way to put it. Given the fact, I mean, Crowder, when he's playing his full allotment of minutes and kind of doing his thing and playing well, he's a $6,000 player typically. So if you figure we're getting him at a pretty significant 15% or so discount right now, then yeah, this is the time to play Crowder, because once he goes back up to 6,000, he goes from being one of those guys who, you know, you can really only play in the best possible matchup. So yeah, I like him a lot in a great matchup tonight.
Yeah, I think he'll be pretty much chalk on FanDuel, I think, because again, this position is not fantastic, all things considered, but it's a little, maybe a little closer on DraftKings, where the prices, you know, they correct the price a little quicker over on DraftKings, and just the, it just takes up more of your cap. So I'm not totally sure it's a lock for me there, but I think on FanDuel, I'm going to have, I can just almost say this definitively, that I'll have him probably, he'll be in all the cash game lineups. After him, though, I don't really know. Nothing's really too exciting. I guess you have LeBron against Chicago. You figure he's going to play minutes. You have Butler going the other way. I mean, anything stand out to you here after a guy like Crowder?
Yeah, I mean, Wilson Chandler's a guy you pointed out. I think it's kind of weird in that we hate playing guys who are backups, but the fact that Chandler is kind of, I mean, we've seen precedent with the Nuggets before where they'll take a guy out of the backup role and give him a very significant number of minutes. Again, it seems like an organizational philosophy built around, you know, doing things in the second unit. And I actually think there's probably something to that. I think that's something that, you know, we're going to see more teams try to capitalize on, especially for very matchups based players. Like Will Barton comes to mind, and Chandler probably to a lesser degree. So I do think there's some merit there. The performance is erratic enough that he's not like a windmill slam guy you want to jam in all your lineups or anything. But like in terms of just having a lot of upside against a really tired Rockets team and a not so good Rockets second unit, I think he's an interesting guy to look at.
Yeah, him and Gallinari. I mean, Gallinari is not taking a ton of shots this year, which is kind of affecting his sort of base numbers, I think, just the way the Nuggets, just the way they're sort of playing on offense. Like he's just like really not putting together the season I kind of thought he was going to. The rebounding numbers haven't been there, like totally, considering how many minutes, like he's playing a ton of minutes and really just not doing a lot, which is just weird, I think. But I could see people playing him. Our system's going to have really a lot of trouble playing him on these prices, just considering sort of what he's doing this season. So guys like him, guys like Chandler are interesting. LeBron, I'm not positive. I can see, you know, Brandon Ingram was in the starting lineup again. He's another kind of guy that falls into the, hey, I'm out there for 40 minutes, and then you're going to just hit value on me because I just like kind of don't do a whole lot. But the Lakers don't play a ton of guys' minutes, but he actually is a guy they've played when he's in the starting lineup. So, yeah, I don't know. This one is small forward is, again, this is what happens when you have a lot of just sort of like teams that are kind of slower, the Clippers, the Pistons, the Hawks, you know, Chicago, Cleveland, the Spurs. When you have a lot of these teams on a slate, it really diminishes the player pool a lot, because it's really difficult to play teams against, excuse me, it's really difficult to play guys against those teams.
Yeah, totally. And I think that actually speaks to why Ingram might be a better play than normal here, because, you know, it's a theme I hit on tons of times in my write-ups, but when you have a position that's very shallow, sometimes escaping it cheaply is the best plan. And I think Ingram allows you to do that, maybe to a lesser extent. Damari Carroll, who we've seen some big performances out of and who probably has some room to grow in terms of his overall minutes workload. So, yeah, there's some definite options here. Wiggins maybe on the high end, like high risk, high reward sort of play. But yeah, it's going to happen. You know, there's going to be nights where you just don't feel super great about any of your options, and you just got to do your best.
I do think people are going to play LeBron here, just because it stands to reason that he's going to play a lot of minutes in this game, just coming out after two losses. I know they've wanted to manage his minutes, against an Eastern Conference sort of rival in the Bulls. I can see a situation where they're not so worried about him in the back-to-back. Again, they've had blowouts in the last two games, so it hasn't, like, it's not like he's played a ton in the last, you know, against the Bucks or against the Clippers. Like, so the last two games he played, right, 34 and 33. For him, that's pretty low. So he's also been really bad, like 26 and 28 fantasy points in those two games.
I know, so uncharacteristic for him. Any chance you think something might be going on?
Yeah, that is interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, but now that you bring it up, I mean, I want to just say it's outlier performances, and, you know, Clippers are a good defensive team, so you can kind of explain that one away. The Bucks just looked really good against the Cavs the other night, especially on defense. where they were kind of flying all over the court, and their length actually did give the Cavs a problem. I want to say it's outlier stuff. I will say too, against the Bucks, they did screw around with rotations a little bit. Like the Cavs went to their just we give up team really early. Like at some point, like near the end of the third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter, when the game wasn't totally out of reach, but it looked not great. I mean, they had guys like McRae and Anderson out there, and it was just kind of like, what are you doing? Like usually they'll stagger the rotation, so at least Kyrie or LeBron is on the court. Like one of them is on the court, but they just kind of didn't even do that in that game, which showed to me it was just like, okay, we lose, like schedule loss here. It's just going to be fine. But
yeah, I think that's actually a great observation, and it could be pointing to the plan to try to rip the Bulls' throats out tonight.
Yeah. So anyway, I could see people doing that. I'm going to take a look at LeBron. I don't think I'm too affected by the last two games. Nothing really stands out. The shots were still there. It could have just been some run bad overall on some of the assists and other things. So I'm not really willing to look too far into it. At power forward,
yeah, I mean, Jimmy Butler, a reasonable defender on him. I guess it's worth pointing out, you know, LeBron hasn't been dominant against Butler or anything in the past. So maybe not the ideal spot to put him in there, but I agree with your sentiment that not much has changed about LeBron as a player.
At power forward, Davis is really expensive, 12-3 on FanDuel, and I think somewhere around the same price on DraftKings. But is it too expensive to play him against a Clippers team that's just, I would just say, excellent on defense?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, yeah, the Clippers have been much better on defense this season, but you know, they have historically not been super, super great against players of Davis's exact profile. This is really the tricky thing about tonight, though, because I think to your point where we're probably going to be able to get someone cheap at somewhere. I mean, and even just one of those kind of guys you get cheap by default, like Brandon Ingram or Damari Carroll or whoever, to where you probably do want to spend up somewhere. And I'll say that I think Davis's warts tonight are more significant than Harden or LeBron's. So he would be the guy, and it's very weird because, you know, normally our system is like, there's no price that's too high for you to pay on Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
but in a tough matchup, I think that's enough of a tiebreaker for me to leave him out tonight.
You know, and the funny thing too is, he's another guy where at some point, because a big part of, the primary piece of our system is minutes, right? Minutes and overall usage, and then
and a baseline project
and baseline projections, of course. But I mean, the thing that takes sort of a personal touch, and the reason we think our system is very good is because of the minutes. Now, it's really hard. I mean, so we have Davis right now at 39 minutes. That for his last four games is low, right? Like he's played 39, 43, 40, 41. At some point, it is so hard. Like it really makes me queasy to put a guy in for like 40 minutes, really. I mean, it's just sort of unprecedented. We just don't do it. Teams don't typically do it. There's more ways for that to go wrong than go right. At what point, though? And then even before that, he had the injury game, 19 minutes, and then 42 before that. One of these games was definitely an overtime game, so I'm just not looking into it right now. And then 37. At what point do we just take his minutes up to like 40 or even higher? Or at any point are we comfortable doing that? Or, I mean, I you know what I mean? Like,
not if you're going for an average projection, I don't think. Just because, yeah, I mean, Davis this season is not even averaging 38 minutes a game because just stuff happens to New Orleans, right? I mean, now some of that was based on how terrible they were before Holiday came back. And that's definitely, I think, worth giving him the extra minute and a half boost that we've given him so far. But, you know, there's definitely times where, especially for big men, again, this doesn't happen to Davis as much as some other people, but, you know, there's foul trouble. There's, you know, just the way the timeouts shake out. Like when you're penciling a guy in to not be on the court for just 8 minutes of the entire game, everything needs to go right for that to wind up being true. And even if it's true for a significant stretch in a row, sometimes it's not. And with Davis, we know too, you know, deep down, this is a guy who is more susceptible than most superstars to exiting a game early.
Yes.
And that's very hard to pin down. Like we wouldn't want to give him half of his projection if we thought that might happen, but giving him just a couple minutes under 40 seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like that 40 mark is that's where I don't think we've ever like consistently had a player projected for 40 minutes. I think like maybe at 1.2 seasons ago when Jimmy Butler was playing under Tibbs, we were like took him right up to that mark. And Tibbs is actually going to push some of these guys maybe into that question at some point this season, but for the Wolves. But yeah, I think that's the general issue with Davis is like at 39 minutes against the Clippers, at least for our system, it's still kind of having trouble with his points per dollar. So I just think he's a guy that I don't mind avoiding. After him, I mean, I wrote up guys like Porzingis and Love. Porzingis was great the other night against the Timberwolves, and really what people saw that matchup against him and Towns as like sort of like this, oh, this is the future kind of thing, because they really did kind of battle. The thing we've been waiting on Porzingis really for his whole career, which is now a season and a couple months long, is the minutes. And but that under Hornacek, I've said that wrong, seems like it's rounding into sort of those high 30s now. Is he just like considered, is he just like a high 30s minutes guy per game kind of going forward?
Yeah, I think so. But it does feel kind of weird because, you know, Porzingis, for whatever reason, whether it's something to do with him or something to do with how the Knicks have wanted to treat him, like he among young, exciting players seems to like wind up randomly playing 25 minutes in a game more than most.
Right.
This season, that really hasn't happened too much, but we're now seeing new fluctuations around this new minutes baseline, right? So if you assume, as I do, that maybe his minutes baseline is something like, say, 37 minutes per night, and I haven't checked, so we have him at 38 minutes.
Yep.
Say it's somewhere in that 37, 38 minutes per game night. Like, he'll dip down to 33 minutes against Charlotte or 30 minutes against Atlanta, and sometimes not for any particular reason other than the coaches seem to feel like it. So we're the upper pressure on Porzingis' price is pushing him very much at the peak of what I'm hoping to pay for him. And yeah, he's paid 5x in each of his last two games, and it's worked out pretty well for us because we played him in both those games. But he's now getting to the point where I'm no longer thrilled about playing him at these prices. Like at 7,200, he was like a 55% start on FanDuel. I don't think it'll be that high tonight, and I don't think it should. And I think the next time he gets more of like a medium matchup or a bad matchup, he'll be out of the picks completely.
The good news on him too, along with the minutes, is that he is actually finding shots, even with guys like Melo and Rose on the team, on the court with him, and which I always thought would be a sort of a concern with him. Not so much with Melo, because in the past they just really didn't have any other guy, but adding a guy like Rose, who is ball first, he's still getting, 20, 20, 16, 16, 23. Those are his shots in the last five games. That's just a really, really good sign for a guy like him, that they're just trusting him more in the offense. I do think you see him as a chalk play tonight, mostly because he's still a fine play considering the minutes, and people will look to that recent game, 29-8-4 with two blocks against Towns last game, and that will just also sway them into the price, even if they were concerned. So I do think he's a chalk play. I think Love would probably be a pretty popular play too. I think they're going to have trouble covering him sort of like perimeter-wise with guys like Gibson. I mean, definitely Mirotić has very little chance against him in certain aspects of the game. But, a guy like Love at 8,300 or like Deng maybe at 6,000. I know they're not the same price. Is there, considering price, would you feel comfortable playing either of those guys in cash?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would feel comfortable playing either of them probably. Deng is a funny guy because we've played him on some of his right nights. I do have memories of that, but it doesn't feel like it's been recently.
Right.
So I'm not sure, if my emotions get the better of me when trying to evaluate Deng as a daily fantasy commodity or what. But, things seem to be pointing in the wrong direction for him. So he's not a guy I would prioritize necessarily, like if everything were close. Love kind of interesting because, he certainly was things were pointing in the right direction for him, but now he's got this little eye thing where he had to get stitches against the Sixers. He came in against Milwaukee and kind of did nothing at all, 3 for 10 from the field. He got some rebounds, but was kind of not pictured in the offense. So I don't know how seriously you want to take that, but he's expensive too. He's at his peak price basically. And I don't know if either of them feels quote unquote safe, at least on a per minute basis.
No, I'm with you. And the Deng thing, Deng runs into problems because he's basically, at least in their offense, he's probably the fourth option for at least shots, because Rubio, yeah, I would say, is fifth, even though teams are just happy to let Rubio shoot wide open shots as much as possible. But so I would put Deng like sort of fourth. And when you're fourth in the chain in terms of your offense, and it's like not like it gets better for him on like a second unit run or anything. So that's really the problem with him. You can really... That's why it can feel like people play, like you said, Deng on the wrong night, because he can just have wrong nights when you're just not a primary option and you're 6,000 bucks, right? If he was 4,000, I don't think we'd worry about it, really. But just making sure that price is a factor. The other guy, the last guy too, just to keep in mind, if he were to sit, Muscala got the start for Millsap the other day and played minutes and was terrible against the Suns. I would be fine going back to him if Millsap was not going to play tonight, and I frankly be happy with it. At 3,700, if he was going to get the start against Detroit, I know he had 7 fantasy points against the Suns the other day, and people say, okay, he stinks. The guy is a fine per-minute guy in general, and so I want to see that game as an outlier. So if Millsap were to sit again, I'd have no problem running Muscala out there as a really nice cost saver. And then finally, we get center. Well, this is our first Sixer game back since the court, you know, cried tears of Sixers past seasons, and they canceled the game. Embiid, nothing really has changed from what we talked about the other day, and the fact that Embiid is supposed to have his minutes cap lifted, or excuse me, raised to about 28 points. Is he just lock and load time at his prices? Considering, I mean, we were considering playing him at 2,400, and now, excuse me, at 24 minutes at these prices. Now it's supposed to go up to 28. Is he just like kind of a must play at center?
We played him even when he wasn't going to play. So that tells you how much we like about Embiid. Right. I mean, even with condensation concerns, we threw him out there. Yeah, I think so. I mean, Embiid is one of these guys. It's going to be very tough for people to evaluate. Thankfully, I think people err on the side of excitement for new players, and that's helping them evaluate Embiid properly, which is to say he's just a transcendent talent. I mean, you just don't see guys come along ever that do this kind of, like, what he's been doing on a per-minute basis. He's like, who's that stupid guy, Boban from the Spurs?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's like Boban from the Spurs, but he can do it over 26 to 28 minutes. Boban not on the Spurs anymore, so maybe not a timely reference. But, yeah, he's just an animal, and he does everything. He rebounds, he blocks, he scores. He's got, I think, either the highest or the second highest usage at the position in the league between him and DeMarcus Cousins. And
well, he is one of the highest usages in the league among all players.
And throwing out all qualifications, right?
Guards included, so, right.
Given that that whole picture, you know, a lot of people will hear, wow, well, what's 4 more minutes? I mean, in this case, it's 16% more minutes, and adding 4 minutes to a guy like Anthony Davis is a lot less of a big deal than a guy like Joel Embiid, who's just playing fewer. So, yeah, he's a slam dunk. It'd be impossible for me to imagine not playing him in cash game tonight.
I will say that I think people will play Towns because they're going to see the 42 minutes last game, and he just had the best game of his career, basically. Actually, just one of the best fantasy games of the entire season for anybody when he went 47-18 and then threw in every other stat as well.
Was that good? That was a good night.
I think that is a case. Look, I love Towns. So this is, and we've been hammered about playing Towns in the past, where people just haven't liked the fact that, you know, there are some nights where he will just disappear in terms of just how, this is what happens with big guys when they play around on the perimeter a lot, is that sometimes the rebounding will kind of go by the wayside in sort of the wrong matchup. But I think people will look to the recent game and say, oh yeah, man, look what he did to the Knicks last game. You have to play him again. That game seems like an outlier, all things considered, for him, right? So he got to the line 20 times. That never, ever, ever happens for him. Like, this guy averages, you know, around five free throw attempts a game. He shot 20 last game. That is just not going to happen again. So I really want to caution people about Towns that you can't lock yourself in for the 17 points he got at the free throw line last game. So and or the 70% shooting he shot. So I don't know. You agree with me on that, on the Towns thing there? Like,
I just don't think he's a $9,400 player.
Exactly.
You know, and that doesn't mean he's unplayable in a good matchup with the Knicks by any stretch. But he's just not a $9,400 player. You know, that's guys like LeBron or, you know, like people in that sort of price tier. And if you just look at the game log, if you want to take him as a big tournament play, knowing now that he has 76 fantasy point upside, no one's going to kill you for that. But, you know, the games before that, 39, 42, 40 points, like, you'll be really unhappy with any of those games. 30 points against New Orleans, like, and even like some of his upside games prior to the big monster, like even 56 fantasy points at 9,400, well, that's excellent. And you'll take that in a second if you're going through it tonight. It's not the thing that wins you games outright. So I'm not willing to stomach the downside for, you know, some slim sliver of a chance at 47 and 18.
Now, I will say that our system still likes him. And it's liked him all year. Like, it likes the minutes, and it likes sort of just what he does on his average game. So it's not like we just, and I have a feeling if you took Embiid out on FanDuel, he would be the guy. But it, just for me, Embiid is such a better play. Actually, he's not. Never mind. It's Biombo. So anyway.
Just calculating that.
Right. So this is all to say, like, the system doesn't hate Towns. He's over a five multiplier for this price, which is very, very, very good considering, all things considered. I just think Embiid is cheaper, doesn't have the same exact upside only because of the minutes, but man, it's close. So anyway, after Embiid, after Towns, any other centers just kind of stand out to you before we go here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at a guy like Valanciunas. I mean, you wrote him up, and I think that was a sharp play. He is a type of guy, again, like he's more scoring dependent than you typically want out of your centers if you're just looking for straight safety. But I think that, you know, helps him have arguably as good a points per dollar upside as a guy like Towns. And what you really get from him is just separation. You know, and what I mean by that is very few people are going to wind up playing him. That said, he's been pretty bad recently, so I wouldn't mind like anyone reaching out and saying, well, I'm just not going to play this guy. He's not going to be part of my big tournament rotation. But I think he's worth having on your radar in a pretty good matchup here against the Lakers, just as a high upside play.
All right, that is it for us today. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You can head over, grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That is optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after that. And it also includes NFL projections as well, all under the same subscription. I think that's about the best deal you can find in the industry. We'll be back again next week talking more NBA. You can also take a listen to, please subscribe to this podcast and also subscribe to our NFL podcast. Today we're going to be jumping on and breaking down every game in the Week 13 NFL slate, so go check that out. All right, buddy, I'll talk to you in a second for NFL. Everyone else, I'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye-bye.